Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of August, recording at 9:08 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have just a quick look at some of the highlights of the week. Now, in terms of stock markets, we've seen some softness. But exceptions tend to be some of the laggards, and this is an interesting point that I'll discuss later. Europe, for instance, has shown relative strength in here this week, and so have some of the resources producers. Now, among the long-dated government bond markets, the main ones, the Western ones at any rate, they have continued to range here, and but not all that far off their actual highs, but they eased slightly this week. In terms of the U.S. dollar, that has weakened for most of the week, well, certainly for the first 4 days, although it firmed in here slightly today. And in commodity markets, the standout performance, and this is really interesting, is that the industrial miners have been quite a bit stronger. And I beg your pardon, I was talking about the industrial miners. Well, some of them have been stronger, and BHP has certainly been quite strong. I meant the metal prices, the industrial metals have been quite a bit stronger this week, and the precious metals have also been stronger as well, with gold closing out the week at 1313 and silver at 2047. What's trading there as I speak? Okay, now let's get back to the big picture, and in terms of stock markets, well, we've had an awfully good run, at least by the leaders, and we've seen a lot of form take place, and not least among the ASEAN indices, which have been bull market stalwarts really until the last few months. Wall Street has been a very strong performer overall, but it has lost form here and has been unable to, well, lost some form. We haven't had anything in the way of downward dynamics yet, but the Dow, for instance, well, I should take the S&P, more people follow that. The S&P is currently around the 1691-92 level, and it has not held the move above that psychological 1700 level so far. But as I mentioned earlier, that we had some good improvement in relative strength among the commodity sectors, and also the European markets, the previous laggards. Now, these are typical developments that we get in what is really quite a mature bull market. And if you remember Wall Street's bull market, and really most of the others, and the Asian ones, like the ASEANs that I mentioned, they actually started a little bit earlier. But Wall Street's bull market started in March of 2009. And we've had one heck of a move here overall, sometimes a bit choppy, but the gains have really been quite significant. And valuations have gone up quite a bit, as you know. It's something we've commented on almost a daily basis overall. Now, what we are seeing is some shifting away from Wall Street. Now, new money is still coming in, and it tends to be a little bit more in terms of private investors. But for instance, private equity firms have been raising cash. For instance, Blackstone is expected to sell its Hilton Hotel chain in an IPO, And we've seen a number of other private equity firms starting to raise cash because they've done very well, as I said, and also because valuations have considerably increased. And I think we can take it for granted that a number of big institutional investors, some from the investment banks, have also been lightening positions at this stage in the leading stock markets, not least Wall Street, which had been running away on the upside. And the classic laggard developments, when I think back on all the bull markets that I've monitored really very closely since the late 19 late 1960s, is that cyclical shares have tended to, of course, underperform and get these big base formation extensions, and then they have often seen quite explosive rallies in the latter stages of the bull market, particularly if money supply is not tightened too quickly. And that's not a problem here right now. Or I'll put it this way: the quantitative easing and various different variations of that from central banks, from the UK to the European Central Bank to the Bank of Japan, have continued to pump money quite aggressively. So we still have this big tailwind, this which is a very positive influence on stock markets, has been for the last few years. But what we are seeing is some nervousness, clearly over the likely tapering of the quantitative easing from the Fed. And it's anybody's guess in here, but a lot of people are guessing that that will actually start in September. And if it doesn't start in September, I would think it's almost a certainty that it would start in December. Now, that's not the same as raising short-term interest rates, and I don't think short-term interest rates will be going up anytime soon. And a lesson that central bankers have learned on many occasions, and in this cycle, which we also saw earlier from Mr. Trichet, when he was leading the European Central Bank, started to raise interest rates, and of course that knocks confidence and growth and leads to a bigger crisis, which the excellent Mario Draghi has been helping to sort out here subsequently. And I think the return, a gradual return of confidence in Europe, and the improvement is also extending to some growth by the mainly from the so-called well, central to northern European economies. That's very good news overall when you consider how much anxiety has surrounded what's been going on in Europe. There's still plenty to worry about, as as well as I. And with some of the southern European economies, it's still a matter of doing badly at a slowing rate. In other words, the economies are still contracting in a number of instances. But there's no doubt that people are not in a panic over Europe here today, and that's reflected in its current share price performance overall. Now, I've already touched on it, but just a quick repeat of this point. But the metal prices, the miners, which often get those big type 3 lengthy extension base formations, this is a typical development, the cyclical laggards coming into form at a very late stage in the bull market cycle. Now, another development which is very typical, I feel, of the major bull markets that I have witnessed, is that we get people taking money out of the more expensive traditional investment vehicles and putting it into some of the emerging markets and even the very very much fringe markets, and those can create some powerful momentum moves. We see that taking place, for instance, in the Middle East with Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and you just get these momentum moves. Just driven by a wall of money, and they can create some very significant catch-up moves, and then they invariably end very badly. And you'll see the technical evidence of that when it occurs. We'll get some dramatic downward dynamics, and usually we'll see some upward accelerations before that happens. It's also happening with the strength of some of the African markets, which have become more popular. Take Nigeria, for instance, which is such an important oil exporter. Okay, so again, if we're late in the bull market cycle, what's actually going to happen? Well, while the monetary policy is still very, very accommodative, and never in my lifetime have I seen more accommodative monetary policy. But while it does remain so accommodative, that's the best protection that we could possibly have against a serious rout. In these markets going forward. Now, I'm going to be a little bit cautious on that because it will depend. Do we get valuations moving even higher generally, or do we get a pause and a lengthy ranging phase, somewhat choppy lengthy ranging phase? I think it's more likely to be the latter. But that's provided that we don't get anything serious going wrong. For instance, I'm going to just mention one factor here. If we were to see, for whatever reason, if we were to see spikes in the price of crude oil, and this has been a problem over the last many, many years on occasion, but were we to see another spike in the prices of crude oil, that would nail growth and it would nail stock markets, and that's what we saw in 2007 and 2008, where the fallout from that occurred in 2008. So, again, monetary policy, accommodative monetary policy, the best defense against a rout, but watch some of those traditional indicators, such as the price of crude oil, because that more than any other commodity really can be quite a quite a game changer. Now, a little sip. Okay. What else is likely to happen? Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw markets mostly in a kind of a choppy ranging phase over the lengthy medium term. In other words, it could take several years. Now, companies that we have liked so much, the autonomies, for instance, they have way outperformed their countries of origin. And of course, these autonomies have greatly outgrown their countries of origin and benefit from what's going on a global basis. But what we see for most of the autonomy, certainly, and really most shares generally, is that corporate profits really have leveled out at best or dipped relative to, in the second quarter, they dipped relative to the first quarter profits in many instances. So we're no longer getting the really powerful profit growth that we were seeing before. I don't think that's because companies are being any less responsible than they were previously, but it is just because we have seen this slowdown in GDP growth, and we've seen these deflationary pressures. China's underperformance has been a big factor in all this, and that can actually raise valuations even further. So we're in a more risky environment overall. I haven't sold any of my long positions in here, and I hope that's been a good decision. And it's tricky hedging in here, at least it has been for me, because I did it too soon in the S&P. But I won't digress on that personal side. I mean, there's too much cover these various global markets for you now. So choppy. Lengthy medium term is my best guess, and then look for the very long term after that, particularly if growth continues to improve overall. Now we are over 5.5 years since the bottom of that big credit crisis. And as you know, I've often mentioned this in the past. It's not my own data, but done by a number of very good economists, that it takes at least 5 to 7 years before you get back to anything like normal GDP growth. So we're near the later stages. If we're over 5.5 years, but we are still in that zone. But over the lengthy medium term, I'm guessing that we will see GDP growth improve, and if markets are ranging, that would bring valuations down once again and set us up for what I think and hope we will actually be seeing. Well, hopes don't matter. What I think there's a good chance that we could be seeing is the beginning of the next secular bull market before the end of this decade. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Quite the opposite. This is a bear market. It was an utterly brilliant bull market over 30 years, but we have seen the end of this. It actually was ending back in 2007, and then of course we had the 2008 and the rest, you know. And so we kind of had a double bottom in terms of the yields. But yields have subsequently completed, or largely completed, base formations, and the long-term outlook is for yields to range sideways to higher. And in some instances, they could go considerably higher. Just think, for instance, when we next have a period of synchronized global economic expansion. We haven't seen that for quite a long time. But when we do have that, obviously, we are not going to have quantitative easing anymore in its various forms. And we will see considerably higher long-term interest rates, and we will also have a higher short-term interest rates. And with these bond yields coming off those record lows, that's going to cause a lot of damage in bond portfolios. And I think it's time to move on from that sector. Now, again, some people say, well, they can hold on and ride things out to maturity. But that may be an uncomfortable ride, and that pinch locks you in, and you may not want to go through something like that. So, I'll repeat what I said right at the very beginning. We are into what is going to be a long-term bull market for these government bond yields. In other words, they will be pushing higher. And eventually that will weigh on equities, but we'll just have to see where equities are as that is occurring, and to judge those risks. And incidentally, and having talked about, I hope to see the beginning of that secular bull market for equities before the end of this decade. And those secular bull markets can last easily 20, 30 years. Now, what we are likely to see during that period is that you would get some cyclical bear markets. I'm not contradicting myself, but think the 1987 crash. That was a short-term cyclical bear market, and we've always, in secular bull trends, you always get a few cyclical shorter-term bear markets, but usually not too many extreme bear market. So the 1987 terrified the world, but if you look at it on a long-term chart, it barely shows up. Okay, and what would be the primary drivers of that secular bull market in equities? Well, it would be the biggest one of all would be this accelerating rate of technological innovation. This is such an important subject. I mention it practically every day. I put up articles on this subject. But this we really are living in exciting times, and they're going to become even more exciting. And that's not a euphemism for terrifying times. Although we get few frights in markets, don't we? That's not really going to change. But I think the technological developments will benefit all of us in terms of some of the products that we're able to use. The biggest beneficiaries of all will be the autonomies and plenty of other companies as well. The biggest losers from that are going to be, of course, employees, because machines are replacing workers, both white collar and blue collar workers, faster than those people can find their own jobs. And that is going to be a problem, I think, that will extend beyond our lifetimes. Okay. What about the currency markets overall? Well, they're choppy, but the percentage moves generally aren't all that big. So a lot of the worst forecasts that you've heard, for instance, that we would get a collapse of the euro. Well, the euro is far from a hard currency, but it's trading at 1.3342 against the US dollar here right now. Sterling, certainly not a hard currency, but it's at 155 against the US dollar. The fuller money view is that the dollar is most likely in a very lengthy base building process, and that it will be stronger over the longer term, partly because it's so competitive at today's levels, and veteran subscribers will remember, at least a couple of decades of a secular bear market in the US dollar where it continued to weaken. Well, I think it will reverse some of that slowly. And again, the reasons for that would be the USA's lead in terms of technological developments, also the USA's competitive advantage here in terms of energy prices, not least. It's not least in terms of natural gas, of which it is now a major exporter. Beg your pardon, a major producer, and it may also export some as well. Canada is also benefiting a lot from that, incidentally. I hope the UK is, and I'm sure it will be, despite the somewhat colorful protests that we're seeing. Europe, well, I don't mean this with, well, I won't say it. I was going to say I don't mean this with any disrespect, but I'm concerned about Europe's energy policies. I'm also concerned about Asia's energy policies, although I think that Asia for sure will come to more sensible solutions somewhat sooner. We know, of course, with all the fracking that we know what the risks are, and it's all about climate change. And I've said repeatedly that we're going to need some luck on that, because it would be naive to think that we can move away from the fossil fuels at any time soon. Yes, some of these renewable energy sources, particularly solar, that's the obvious one, are going to get better and better and become more and more important. That's already happening, and that will go on for decades, I assume. But we're still going to need a lot of fossil fuels, and if that's mostly coming, I beg your pardon, we're still going to need a lot of fossil fuels, and if that's coming mainly from natural gas, that's a good trade-off here overall. Wind farms, don't get me started on that subject, but veteran subscribers will know my views. I also think an exciting development. I think I posted an article on this subject on Wednesday. But the next generation of nuclear is going to be very, very promising, and it will be a wonderful technology. I'm not talking about old nuclear. Old nuclear is these are plants that were built in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and they're scary. They are now incredibly expensive to build today. They are risky, although they've got a generally good reputation in terms of safety and not causing anywhere near the deaths that we've seen with from other energy sources. You know, think of all the people who've died in coal mines, and well, you know the point. But of course, when something goes wrong with one of those old nuclear plants, it's horrendous, as we see with very unlucky Fukushima on this, although it's an accident that they set up. Now, new generation nuclear, the biggest thing about it of all is you know, they've got to be able to reduce that toxic fuel, and I'm optimistic. You know that in the accelerating rate of technological evolution that they will be able to be able to do that. But some scientists have told me no, that won't happen. I think if it's an important challenge, that it eventually will, and I hope it actually does. But my feeling is, and one of the reasons for the secular bull market that I expect is that we will have cheaper energy in real terms starting in the latter part of this decade and well beyond. Now, that's already happened with the United States, but not elsewhere that much, and speeding up the adoption of fracking would help considerably. Okay, what about the industrial metals in here? Well, China's slow growth is obviously not helping, but we're already getting a bit of a technical recovery here overall, and as growth produces, I think we'll see prices move considerably higher once again. But the sector has been, well, it's pretty much always been highly cyclical, as you know. We had a period there where miners were performing like growth shares when China's demand was so voracious, but that has changed overall. Now, what about these precious metals? Well, I think there's a reasonable chance, as I've said before, that we've seen lows or are very close to potentially important lows. You know, I know you've got forecasts that gold will go down to $1,000 versus its 13, 14 right now. And some are saying 800, and some are saying 500. Usually, when you get these big extrapolations, that is an end game. Remember those big extrapolations on the upside? You know, people were putting telephone numbers on the price of gold when it was up near its highs overall. So, my feeling is that gold has fallen enough. I would not chase these rallies at all, because we're likely to see a somewhat more lengthy support building process overall. But if you can buy it on weakness, I certainly wouldn't go overboard. But I think it's, 5% of your portfolio in gold, maybe up to 10%. I think that's not a bad idea overall, because gold, I tend to regard it rather conservatively as hard money. But hard money can move in and out of fashion, and that's certainly what we have seen. It can become overextended, and you get big shakeouts and so on. But over the very long term, gold is going to hold its value better than fiat currencies. It always has over the long term, and my guess is that that it always will. And on that note, I think that's just about a wrap, except I haven't mentioned the foods. So far, we're in a kind of a lucky period where food prices have not been pushing up dramatically for the most part. They're a bit firm in terms of cattle prices, but those big staple grains have not moved up. Hopefully, that remains the case for a while longer. But again, we get these big variations in weather patterns overall. Nice to have a good crop yield, and have good prospects for good crop yields from this current crop cycle. Now, last but not least, my apologies for the difficulties that we have had with emails, with the what is the free comment of the day, which I know alerts many of you subscribers at the website. Postings have been completed during the day. There have been some spam attacks, and other problems. I know how incredibly frustrating that is for us, and not least for you, and I thank you so much for your patience. And on that note, folks, all the very best. Have a fantastic weekend.